sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Well, welcome to Sex and Happiness, a program about sex and happiness, and I'm Lori Handlers, your host. And today I have a stunning show lined up for us, and I'm going to just jump right into it. I don't need to rant about any of it because you will find my introduction of my guest to be a rant all in of itself. My guest today is Richard Wagner, Ph.D. He is the only Catholic priest in the world with a doctorate in human sexuality. He's a gay man and the author of the seminal work, Gay Catholic Priests, a study of cognitive and affective dissonance. The media firestorm that erupted after its publication and the backlash within his religious community because of its publication eventually destroyed his public priesthood. Now Richard speaks out again. His latest book, Secrecy, Sophistry, and Gay Sex in the Catholic Church, The Systematic Destruction of an Old Oblate Priest, provides an intimate and disturbing look into the unseemingly inner workings of the Catholic Church. It's a story of how this institution deals with dissent in its midst and to what lengths it will go to silence a whistleblower. It involves the highest levels of the Vatican bureaucracy, secret documents, corporate incompetence, and institutionalized homophobia on an epic scale. Richard's account of ecclesiastical malfeasance is both timely and in sync with current trends in the popular culture, from the gay marriage debate to the revelation of rampant clergy sexual misconduct. Richard Wagner, thank you for joining me on this show.
That was a mouthful. And thanks for having me back. This is my second appearance. I feel honored.
It is. Well, I found out that this book was coming out when you were on the first time with me, and I said, oh, my God, I have to have you back. I mean, you're amazing. You're a person stirring up a storm, stirring up a tidal wave, stirring up a tsunami in the world of religion and what's been happening in religion. And it is my pleasure to know you. Actually, it's my honor to know you.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I just gave our listeners a total mouthful of tongue-tying, thrilling words. And the most exciting part of it for me was the part that said, with highest levels of Vatican bureaucracy, secret documents, corporate incompetence, and canonical corruption in an institutionalized homophobia on the epic scale. That's like the Da Vinci Code.
Well, you know, it is. I mean, many people who have read the book have likened it to a murder mystery. And indeed, there was a murder. I mean,
yeah,
it was my vocation and my character that was assassinated and killed off. And it was because I was a whistleblower, basically. I published my doctoral thesis. You quoted it in your opening, Gay Catholic Priest, a Study of Cognitive and Affective Dissonance, which was a study of 50 Catholic priests in the active ministry back in 1981. And I wanted to try to come up with some kind of analysis of the difficulty that gay priests faced as they tried to be both honest about themselves as sexual beings and be true to their vocation. And this was a study that was paid for by my religious community, so it was paid for by the Catholic Church. They knew what I was studying. They supported me. They encouraged me, all of that kind of stuff. As you said in your opening, I'm the only Catholic priest in the world with a doctorate in clinical sexology.
That's
and
amazing, yeah.
It is. Well, you know, I mean, the church is not famous for understanding or even appreciating human sexuality, so there's that. At any rate, when this was published, there was a firestorm of publicity surrounding the publication, because back in 1981 there was no such thing as gay priests, and that was the party line, that because I had blown the cover on this secret that the church has had for decades and decades and centuries, actually.
Centuries, really, forever.
That now I needed to be punished. I needed to be silenced. I needed to be dealt with in the most severe manner, so that anyone else, you know, that was so inclined to be as obvious and upfront and questioning as I was would pay a similar price.
Now, you had to know, listen, I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm not Catholic, you know, I wasn't brought up Catholic, many of my friends were brought up Catholic and everything. I've been around the block a few times, especially in human sexuality, so you had to know that you were going head first down the middle, no helmet. You had to know that
you were...
Know,
it's a curious thing, and there was a window back in the late 70s, early 80s, where the church was just coming off of Vatican II, and there was this great push toward social justice, and the ministries of the church were kind of reflecting that. There was this new openness, and I was aware that this was a dangerous topic, certainly, but I had the full and absolute support of my religious community. They put me forward. They said, you go and study. You get this degree, and then we're going to put you forward as an upfront gay minister doing upfront gay ministry. And I said, okay, that's fine and dandy. The person who directed my dissertation, Wardell Pomeroy, who was Kinsey's right-hand man, mind you, took me aside when I proposed this, and he said to me, he said, Richard, you have no idea what you're dealing with here. And I said, oh, come on, Wardell, don't be so dramatic. And
things are changing. Everything's going to be all right.
I said basically that. I said, I know that it's dynamite, but I'm covered. I have the support of my community, and they've promised this, and they put me forward. And Wardell said, still, you'd have no idea what you're dealing with. When Kinsey and I did our groundbreaking study, you know, on male sexuality.
Kinsey report, right?
Exactly. He said that there were like five or six priests who were rolled into the male population that consisted of the study, and there was no identification of them as priests, either gay or non, but their sex histories were rolled in with the sex histories of all the other people that contributed to that study. And he said, but here you are studying 50 self-identified gay Catholic
priests
in the active ministry. He said, this is going to blow you out of the water.
And honestly, so it has.
It did, and I was unprepared.
Yeah.
Really unprepared. And absolutely the very first wrinkle that came down the pike after the publication of the dissertation back in 1981, the entire support system of my religious community collapsed, and I was a pariah and on the outside being drummed out of ministry.
Yeah. Yeah, I can only imagine. I can't even imagine. You know, I can't even imagine. Your work, how you put yourself in the way, you know, in the eye of that storm, and what you're saying, and I have no reason to doubt what you're saying, that, you know, you really thought you were covered, and then you weren't covered. To me, it's like you set about to change the world, and that part of the world is very stable. Yeah, it's a very stable and unchanging place. I mean, it's just...
Well, when it changes, you know, over the centuries. It's not like next week kind of change.
Right.
Even to this day, all these years later, I really do believe that, you know, my dissertation is now part of the popular culture. It is part of the historical record, and, you know, it will have its impact, and it continues to have its impact even today. So it's not for naught, as they say. But, the great difficulty was that that's all I knew how to do was be a priest. I wanted to be a priest since I was you know, like 7 years old, I was, you know, smitten with the idea. I overcame the most outrageous obstacles in order to become a priest. And then finally, after all of this time, 8 years of study to become a priest, and then 5 years of in active ministry, and then all of this came crashing down.
Halt.
And I didn't know that my entire support system was the church. I had very few friends outside of the church. And when all of that was taken away in the twinkling of an eye, and literally it was taken away in a twinkling of an eye, they took away my car, my finances, my insurance, my ability to act as a public minister. So I was shunned. I was on the outside, and it nearly destroyed me. I'm almost ashamed to admit it, but it nearly destroyed me.
Listen, you know what? From the ashes, the phoenix rises.
I suppose that's true. I suppose that's absolutely.
And there's something I want to say to you that I know that you intrinsically know this, but I'm going to say this. I quote you. You said all you knew how to do was be a priest, and I assert that what you knew how to do better was to tell the truth. You had
that was the big part of being a priest, from my point of view. Of course, you know, that flew in the face of you know what the church is all about, because the church is all about secrecy and sophistry and lying and prevarication and, you know, covering up and all of that kind of stuff. Anything that is going to be, from their point of view, scandalous or challenge, you know, the church's position was going to be something that was an affront to them, even if it was true.
Especially because it's true. Well, we're going to stop here for a second, but when we come back, I want to talk to you also about this phoenix, the idea of the phoenix rising from the ashes, all the things you've done since and what you've created for people and a kind of freedom that you give people in this, who are faced with some very same things, although they weren't the one who went first, head first down the middle. So you're listening to Sex and Happiness. My guest today is Richard Wagner. We could say Dr. Richard Wagner, PhD, a person who went against the Catholic Church as a gay male, a gay Catholic priest. And his story is astounding. So when we come back, I'll be asking him more questions about what he's done since. And we'll see if we can get some kind of a really great lesson out of all this. I ask if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response. Perhaps you know a woman who could use this. Many women say that the feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as much or as naturally as they would like them to happen. So let me tell you about Zestra. Zestra was developed to provide a much-needed option for all women to feel more sexually satisfied. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each individual packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts fresh. Zestra is safe. It's a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes, and the initial sensations are called the Zestra Rush. The effects tend to peak at around 10 minutes, and they last for up to 45 minutes. And here, too, Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. In my opinion, all women deserve sexual satisfaction, so I highly recommend that you try Zestra by calling 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please say that you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We'll be right back.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Laurie talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Laurie's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Laurie is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Laurie sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Laurie Handlers, go to www.shamanicrelease.com. butterflyworkshops.com right now.
Well, we're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and today I'm interviewing Dr. Richard Wagner, who was a priest, a gay priest, who went up against the centuries of Catholic Church. His latest book, Secrecy, Sophistry, and Gay Sex in the Catholic Church, The Systematic Destruction of an Oblate Priest, provides an intimate and disturbing look into the unseemingly inner workings of the Catholic Church. And Richard and I were just talking about that when we had to go to break. So, you know, I think that you're amazing that you did that, and probably for you at the time it was the only water you could swim in, because you were like one of these idealists who I identify with you, and I think many people that are listening can identify with you. An idealist type person who sees the glass as half full and feels that everyone who gave you their word is going to keep it. And all the vows that you probably took and they made you take, and that you thought they kept them.
Right.
It sounds like you were an optimist in a storm of secrecy, really.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, there are a lot of people who really disagree with me and disagree with my research and problems with it, or problems with me and all this kind of stuff. But one thing that they cannot take away from me is just what you said, and that is that I did my best. You know, I was given a task by the church, and I lived up to it the very best that I could, and I did groundbreaking research in an effort to bring the church to a recognition of something that was painful for them to look at. And I actually contend that had the church paid closer attention to what I broke open back in 1981, we would have seen considerably less in terms of the absolutely phenomenal clergy abuse scandal that even now is awash, you know, all over the world.
You know, I imagine that what you're saying is true, and yet 2020 is in the eye of the beholder. I don't know that, I mean, the church, there's no individual. There's not an individual sense of integrity.
No, there isn't.
It's an institution like the government,
yeah.
The church, the state. Who's one person who could be accountable? So it seems that you, as an obvious positive thinker, somebody who sees the glasses half full, a person who is an optimist and trusting, no less, you told the truth, you did a study, you went up against the century-old institution of the Catholic Church, to say nothing of fear that is instilled by the church on people, fear for their life, fear for damnation in hell, fear for whatever, and then an institution which actually has no face.
It's true.
You know, there's no one person who could take accountability and say, Richard Wagner is right, we should look at this.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, despite the many flaws of the church, and God knows there are plenty, there were, and probably still are, trends within the church, very progressive trends, where people are trying to free the church from its historical context of fear and intimidation, and you know, that still goes on. And I was part of that, you know, when I was in the saddle as a priest. And you know, I don't practice anymore. I have no affiliation with any organized religion anymore. I actually had my fill by the time the 13 years of abuse by the church ended in 1994. But there are people who are trying to make a difference. And what you say is the prevailing opinion of the church, of ostracizing and fear-mongering and guilt-ridding of people. But there are other folks who are trying to make it more human.
Well, you know what? There's always going to be people who are going to stick to their convictions,
yes,
about things improving, life getting better, making a difference on,
yes,
the planet, whether it be in religion or whether it be in
so
government or whatever. Like, for some crazy reason, I'm that way. And, you know, I went up against many, you know, I never went up against like a tradition like that, but I've certainly taken some big battles on in my life. And
well,
I would
any
always
of us in the area of human sexuality will have.
Absolutely.
And you had to.
I've been doing it before that. That right. wasn't even where I never expected to be this. My seventh grade guidance counselor did not say to my parents, she's going to be a tantra master when she grows up. I mean, you know, that's absurd. I was a school teacher. I was a college teacher. I was a corporate consultant. Everything teaching, teaching, teaching. How did I know I would teach sex? I never dreamed of that. Mm-hmm. But my point here is really that I would go up against things. You know, I went up against my university a few times. I certainly went up against other powers that be. And
yes.
people who always told me they would be with me, like when I was marching in. When I turned around, there was never anyone there.
I know. It's funny, huh?
It's like they were like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Go ahead. Go for it. Hello?
It's a phenomenon that lots and lots of people, I think, in our audience may have experienced at some point in their lives as well. You know, about taking a stand, acting from their moral principles, whatever they might be, and finding out that, you know, their support base has evaporated in the process, and they are standing alone. It's a daunting thing, is it not?
Yeah, it is. If we ever make the movie of this, you know, which I'd love to discuss with you, if we ever make the movie of this, it seems to me that, you know, little Richie will be called up by the Pope. they'll fly you on a special Vatican plane to meet the Pope, and the Pope will go, you know, in some accent. I don't know who the Pope was then, but some accent. Oh, my Richard, things you don't understand. And you'd go, you know, no, we have to do this. You try to enroll him in it.
Yes.
We have to change. There's so many lives at stake here. There's so much at stake here. And yet, stupidly, we could say, they didn't heed your call. And now they've been blasphemous. There's been blasphemy all over the papers and the news programs, et cetera, et cetera. So what to do? You know, I acknowledge you for the courage. And I'm sure during the time of the courage, it just seemed like the only thing to do. So that it didn't even probably have to muster all the courage. It was just like that was the water you were swimming in then.
It's true. I mean, had someone presented to me that if you actually did this, this is what would happen, I probably would have paused more than I did. But you were right. You know, I just went headlong into it thinking, well, this is my calling. This is my vocation. This is what God has sent me to, and this is what I must do. And so I did. It's probably just as well that I didn't realize what the consequences were, or I probably would have become more squeamish.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't, you know.
I am too.
There is something about truth prevailing, and I think that's a huge lesson here. And also, you've made wonderful, you know, the ashes that you rose from and what you've done with your life, which is what we're going to talk about in our next segment, are very important and very, very powerful, because we're still witnessing, as you say, the pedophile after pedophile moving from one crime scene to another.
Yes.
And so obviously, there are victims of clergy abuse and church abuse, and this is what you've now dedicated your life to helping people who are victims of abuse and to sexuality. So that's, of course, what we're going to talk about, and that's needed on the planet, whether the church heeds you or not.
Exactly the point.
That's so, so important. So when we come back, I'm going to be talking to Richard Wagner about what he's done as a result of this huge expose, and, you know, also how the book's doing, because I'd like to feel like the book's doing good. I want some justice here. So we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. This is Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers.
How would you like to lose up to a pound a day with no exercise required, with no hunger, without being on a restrictive diet for the rest of your life, and no unpleasant side effects? If this appeals to you, you want homeopathic HCG. How do you get that? You go to hormonenurse.com. That's H-O-R-M-O-N-E, nurse.com. There you can find out about HCG and this amazing diet. It's a diet I've used, and I've lost an amazing amount of weight. I'm back to my college size. Plus, you'll find out about hormones, bioidentical hormones. Perhaps you need that too. You need it maybe for sleep, for sexual passion again, your libido. Go to hormonenurse.com.
We're back with Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and today I am talking to Richard Wagner, PhD, ACS, psychotherapist, clinical sexologist in private practice in Seattle, Washington. He's been a practitioner of sex therapy and relationship counseling for 30 years. And this all came out of his going up against the Catholic Church exposing gay sex within the church that the church actually paid for, his study of this and his PhD. So tell us a little bit about this special outreach that you do, Richard, to survivors of clergy abuse and how really widespread it is, at least in the numbers that you see and anyone else that you know.
Okay. Well, first of all, I should backtrack and say that I was sexually molested myself when I was
14. Was going to ask you that. I'm so glad you remembered to tell me that.
When I was 14 years old, I was in seminary, an oblate seminary in southern Illinois, and the superior of the seminary molested me and on three different occasions. And it was a very traumatic kind of thing. And in the process, I left the seminary thinking I would never return. In fact, telling my parents that I would never have anything to do with the church or priests or anything like that ever again. And then became a wild child in high school, the rest of high school. And then went back to seminary afterwards and, of course, was ordained. But so
Wait, before you go, I mean, there's a few things in there in that,
sure.
But I went back. One is, first, could you say what oblate is?
Oblate is the name of the religious community that I belong to, the Oblates of Mary Immaculate. It's like the Franciscans or the Jesuits or the Dominicans, and it's a religious community in the church.
Okay.
And, so that's the kind of priest that I was.
Okay. And then you said something about you. Oh, you vowed to never go back to your parents. You were 14 years old. You went, became wild in high school. And then you went back. Like, what?
Yes, it is. That's exactly the response.
Are you kidding me? What do you mean?
The response my family had. I never told my family about the abuse that happened because I was so ashamed. But as I said to you in an earlier segment today, I had this burning desire to be a priest since I was like 5 or 7 years old. And despite saying that I would never do this, never go back to seminary or even go back to the church, I did after high school and entered college seminary and was much more successful than the high school experiences. But still, I carried this experience of abuse along with me. And I told several of my superiors throughout my formation process, throughout my seminary experience, about what had happened to me, and they were incredulous. You know, I suspected they just didn't believe me, because way back then, you know, if there was any knowledge of this kind of stuff going on, it was all so completely hidden that they blamed the accuser rather than the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So I have this special simpatico, this special closeness to other people who have been similarly abused by clergy or people who in authority in their life. And so I've made it my business to have this outreach to other survivors, you know, people who, you know, are trying to put themselves back on a road to healing and to sexual health, sometimes much later in their lives, in their 40s and 50s, after, you know, being molested as young children.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, to me, most people really have to come to terms with it in their midlife. They don't really always come to terms with it in their 20s or 30s because it's still so hidden and so shameful.
Well, they were doing the acting out behavior, you know, the drug abuse and, you know, alcohol abuse and other behaviors that were an indication of how troubled they were inside because of this really horrible experience.
Right.
That they were
sex addiction.
Yeah, exactly.
Sex addiction.
Yes.
Yeah. So then they, yeah, so then finally they get straight, you know, or whatever. They get off the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll. But, I mean, it becomes manageable if they still have a drink or they still do a drug or they still have sex, but it becomes manageable. They're not acting out like that. And then all of a sudden they're 40.
That's right.
Go, oh, wow, I have this deep, dark secret and it's not doing so well. And there's festering as an ulcer or prostate cancer or...
It's true enough. Recently I had a young man write to me at drdicksexadvice.com, and he identified that he was having sex with his wife, and his wife tried to initiate, you know, like a little anal stimulation, like insert her finger in his butt, and he had this immediate flashback to when the same thing happened as a kid by a priest. And you know, all of this was so covered inside of him, so undercover inside of him, that he didn't even remember. You know, it was a lost memory. And
yes.
But his wife, in this loving act of sex play, triggered this whole thing, and he completely fell apart. Completely fell apart. And
yes.
His wife was just so distraught over the whole thing because she had no notion of what had gone on. And so it's a frightful kind of thing. And now he's on his road to recovery and sexual healing that he can only put in place now that he's in a much healthier position after remembering what terrible things happened to him.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, look, not everyone does remember their traumatic incident because, you know, again, this is going into the biology of it. But when we have danger, organisms have fight or flight. That was the only thing when I was in psychology that they taught about, fight or flight. But then Peter Levine came out, and I don't know if he was the first one, but Peter Levine came out with his theories about trauma, and he talked about freeze. And when people freeze and they become like a deer in the headlights,
that's right.
They don't fight and they don't run and they just become frozen in time. And
that's
right. They either remember, but mostly they don't remember what made them freeze, because the freeze switch, there's something called brain switch, and the freeze causes a switch in the brain. And for that moment in time, they actually, many of people who are abused this way leave the body.
Right.
In that moment, they pull out and they report that they're on the ceiling looking down at the thing, at themselves and what's happening. But
right.
And they can then keep leaving the body, but they don't really remember the initial trespass.
Yes. We're complicated beings along those lines. And to have an integrated, healthy sex life, in fact, we talked about this the first time I was on your show. I mean, we really need to have an integration. We really need to have all of us, all of our parts, not just our genitals, but our, you know, emotions and our psychology and our willingness to embrace our eroticism. We need to have that all like ducks in a row in order for us to be healthy individuals.
This is so true, and that's why there's you, and that's why there's me.
Exactly that, and thanks to God that there are folks like us around.
Yeah, people need to be set free of all the stuff, all the layers and the overtones and the shame and the guilt and the ways that people have set about to control us by going straight to the sexuality, like making that as a part that's off to the side when everything
right.
else is acceptable for the most part.
Right.
So the numbers of people that are traumatized this way must be spectacular. That's all I could think. Like,
it's true.
Astounding.
That's true.
And you, in your practice, you've been counseling for 30 years.
Yes.
And I mean, do you see anybody who's not clergy-related? Do you see people
Oh, sure.
who... Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the sexual violence is part and parcel of the human experience. I mean, it's a very sad, terrible thing. But it happens all over the place. I mean, family members and trusted adults, you know, preying upon vulnerable youth. It's
babysitters.
It's true.
Too.
It's true enough.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's a very curious kind of thing. The adults sometimes are frozen as in their childlike sexuality. And despite the fact that they're adults, their psychology and their sexuality is teen or preteen. And so, and this is often the case, you know, with abusing priests. They were lost as children.
Yes.
Sexually, and they never grew up. And so when they become sexual as adults, it's often directed toward their peers, their psychological peers who happen to be, you know, teens and preteens.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to pause there for a moment. This is so, it's fascinating. Really, the whole subject is fascinating, and I've had my suspicions, but you're confirming them for me today. So I really, really thank you. I thank you for speaking out. I thank you for all of it. So when we come back, I'm interviewing Richard Wagner today, who is a psychotherapist, clinical sexologist in practice in Seattle, Washington, and he counsels people who are victims of sex abuse. And maybe he counsels others as well, and we'll find out more about that. I have some more questions to find out from him, and then, of course, we'll find out how you can get advice from him, how you can contact him, and how you can get a copy of his book. So stay tuned. This is Sex and Happiness.
Are you in pain or unable to sleep? Ever hear about how the body needs glutathione for natural cleansing? Could you use a boost of energy? Try Life Wave Patches. There are a variety of patches to choose from. Each one of them is designed like a small band-aid to help your body with the challenges of life when you're simply not getting what the body needs for support. And you can use these amazing patches on your pets. Go to Life Wave Patches for Pets and People on Facebook and see Suzanne Summers' interview with Dr. David Schmidt about patches that reduce stress and inflammation while increasing energy. You can also find out more at ValerieHandlers.com. That's ValerieHandlers.com. Or call Valerie at 714-928-6399 to order your patches, or consider becoming an independent Life Wave distributor. That's 714-928-6399.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Laurie Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Laurie Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
This is Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, and today I'm interviewing Richard Wagner, who designs, develops, and produces long- and short-term seminars and workshops for healing and helping professionals, including religious leaders. He's facilitated support groups for gay clergy of numerous denominations for many years. So you have a screen presence. You have a, you know,
an internet presence.
Yeah, DrDickSexAdvice.com. And that name is just so provocative.
And that's why I chose it, actually. And I went from Father Wagner to being Dr. Dick. Actually, there's a very fine line between the two, and possibly no line at all. And once I was persecuted out of the church, you know, I felt liberated, and I was going to use all the gifts that were given to me in my education, and I surfaced again as Dr. Dick, and I started writing a sex advice column back in, oh God, the late 90s, and have been doing it ever since. And you can find me on the internet, Dr. Dick Sex Advice, com. I also have, in terms of the book that we have been discussing, I have a presence on the internet there too, and that's called gaycatholicpriest.org.
Great. So that's where, when people who are listening today, if they could be inflamed to want to talk to you and want to get in touch with you.
Well,
and
I hope so.
I'm hoping so. And so they would go to either one of those. They might want sex advice at Dr. Dick, sexadvice.com, or gaycatholicpriests.org. And that's plural, priests.org.
Right.
You can find out Richard Wagner there. Now, I got a personal question for you.
Okay.
And that is, so in your life now, I mean, do you have a partner? Do you have a lover? How has it been for you to get intimate? Obviously, you were violated at age 14 by a priest in your chosen profession. Then you were shunned and banned and banished from the Catholic Church. And so after all the trauma that you must have sustained, how is it for you being intimate with another person?
Hardly ever was a problem, curiously enough. It's an amazing thing because, you know, I see lots of people who are severely traumatized by much less than what I experienced. How I got through it, I don't know. When I was involved in the 13-year controversy with the church, it was very depressing. It was not a happy time for me, mind you. But I had a round of good friends, and they were very supportive. But once the controversy was over, I felt really happy, and I was able to resume a very happy and healthy and integrated sex life, and I'm happy.
That's great. I mean, I just didn't know, because we are talking really about what happened to your professional life, et cetera. And I just thought, you know, I never asked you anything personal before. Like, how's your sex life? Hey, Dr. Dick, how's your sex life?
I love it. You know, I think sex is really great. It's a wonderful, wonderful way of communicating with another person. And, you know, it can be recreational. It can be intense. It can be relationship oriented. There's lots and lots of ways to be sexual with different people. And sometimes it doesn't involve genitals at all, as you well know. And
Right. Sometimes
it's just being present and being close to another human. And that's intensely sexual, if you ask me.
Yeah, it really is. Thanks for just sharing that with me. I liked hearing that. I have a great feeling about you. I mean, this is our second show together, and I feel like you're easy to connect with. I feel like people who come to you for counseling or people that are involved with you in your private life probably have the same kind of feeling about you, like you're easily approachable and articulate and willing to tell the truth, which is, I mean, to me, that's the biggest bonus, like someone to tell the truth. Wow, how great is that?
One of the things that, you know, I try to do is when I encounter somebody who's coming to me in my private practice or even sends me a email through Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, my starting point is that sex is good, and good sex is even better. In fact, I say that at the end of every one of my podcasts. That's my mantra. Good sex is good, and good sex is even better. And so sometimes people come to me and they are really broken. They are very disturbed. But that's just the starting point. And, you know, my effort is to help them reintegrate sexuality into their life. I never sink to the lowest common denominator. Sure, there has been trauma. Sure, there's been sexual violence. Sure, that happens. But, you know, that's in the past. Let's move on. Let's make something new. And, you know, that's really encouraging to the people who seek me out. I'm not going to be woe is me with them any more than I was woe is me with myself. You know, I just said, you know, get back on your horse and let's figure this out. Let's find another way to contribute to the world if the church and priesthood door is closed.
Yes. Very, very good. Very good. Well, let me ask you this. We have just a few minutes remaining. If people go to drdicksexadvice.com, what are they liable to find there? You know, like what kinds of information can they get from you? Because I know you have a very rich website there. So what kinds of things? I know you write some columns and what about you review things?
Right. I have an adult product review site, drdicksextoyreviews.com, that you can link through from the main site. So we do a lot of that kind of stuff, a lot of reviews of sex toys and other adult-related products. I constantly updating my site 3 or 4 times a week with questions and answers, podcasts. I've done 300 podcasts, and they're all archived on my site. I have wonderful, interesting guests. Often interviews with erotic authors and other sex therapists and people in the kink community and people who are living alternative lifestyles, people who are on the front end of the adult products marketplace. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. Of course, I do answer questions both written and in podcast form. There's lots and lots of very sexy things on my site that I'm very, very proud of. So you could spend an entire day there and not get nearly halfway through.
That's so great. Could spend a day on my website. That's wonderful. Really wonderful. And then if the people go to the I want to get the name of it right, to gaycatholicpriests.org, what will they find there?
This is the site to help promote my book. I'm writing a series. Currently, I'm writing a series on Catholic moral theology, and it's a 5-part series. And so that's there. Information about my book, interviews, both written and audio interviews with me about my book. There's also a blog associated with that site, and that has information about current happenings in the Catholic Church that, you know, interface with human sexuality and the popular culture.
So this is great. So people, you can find Richard Wagner on these websites. You can listen to his podcasts. And so my question for you is, in our final moments, what could you leave people with? What thought or feeling expression would you leave them with to go on as we close out the show? What's a message that you'd like them to have?
Well, I want to share my mantra with them again that I just mentioned a little while ago, and that is, sex is good, and good sex is even better. And there's so much in the popular culture that wants to tell us that sex is bad, and I stand against that. It's not bad. It's a wonderful thing. And if you do it right, and if you do it in a way that is life-affirming and uplifting, it's even better. So that's what I want to leave your audience with. And
that's
if
great.
People want to contact me, they can contact me through either one of my sites, my email address, and there's even a call-in number where people can leave voicemail messages on drdicksexadvice.com. And, you know, contact me with your thoughts and comments. I'm eager to hear from you.
Thank you so much. Well, that's a wrap. It was such an important show. Thank you for joining me again. It's
always a joy, Lori. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to thank my listeners, and I want to thank my sponsors. Thank you to thehormonenurse.com, and thank you to my sister, Valerie Handlers, and Life Wave Patches for People and Pets. Go to valeriehandlers.com, and also to, in West Palm Beach, to Ladybug Eco-Friendly Pest Control, and my newest sponsor, Zestra. Thank you so much, all of you, for supporting this show, and I'll be back with you again soon. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to make-